Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms. I'm based in London. Every week I get together with my old friend Lockwood Phillips in North Carolina and we discuss world affairs. Among the topics we discuss this week are the state elections, or the elections for senator, I should say, in Alabama, and also the problems in the Middle East. There are also lots of other topics. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. Viewpoints around the world with us this afternoon. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you. Thank you for taking the time to be with us, as always.
Always a pleasure, Lockwood.
So, how's the weather there in London?
Oh, cold, wet, and miserable.
I can appreciate that. It's wintertime.
It is. And it's nice when you're out and about. It's nice to come home to a warm house.
I can appreciate it is. Well, let's talk about some of the stories that have been breaking here in the States. And, of course, I'm wondering there in Europe as well. Let's start with the big story here. We're still paying close attention to the issues related to Judge Roy Moore, a senatorial candidate out of Alabama. And, of course, the continuing stories of sexual harassment and impropriety. And I'm wondering, is that getting much coverage there in the European press and particularly in the UK?
Yes. Roy Moore is getting a lot of coverage. I think Hollywood has moved to the inside pages now. But Roy Moore is certainly getting a lot of coverage. I heard one announcer on radio saying, what do you expect from Alabama? It's a state of learning disabled people. But
wait a second. I've got to respond to that very quickly. You know, it's interesting how it's very capable of a liberal media to make comments that would otherwise
be conservative.
Well, no. Our observations here in the States is that conservative media in the European
Nigel
press,
Farage.
That's an attitude and a response that we don't even find humorous here, because we find some folks from Alabama, and by the way, they have a very good football team, to be very fine people, and to call them disadvantaged in any way is just inappropriate. But I have to make that note. Continue on. I just find it interesting how.
I thought it was worth mentioning.
Okay, go for it.
But it was being mentioned in the context of mm-hmm. the state is a very big place, mm-hmm. and there are different attitudes towards sexual harassment and everything else in different parts of the country, and that what's important in Alabama is perhaps Roy Moore's religious beliefs, and that these trump, excuse the expression, everything else.
I don't know that that's quite that's to me somewhat of a stretch. It is interesting, and of course, since the story has broken with the senatorial candidate Roy Moore, Judge Roy Moore, we're now seeing a variety of stories breaking related to other escapades, if you will, in government services. And
surprise!
I know it is interesting. You know, there has been, since Harvey Weinstein's unveiling or discoveries or whatever you want to call them, this just seems to be a flood of experiences, not only in the States, but I guess in Europe as well. So back to that question, and I know that there was some questions related to the conservatives there in the UK. Is there a sense that this is beginning to get old news other than the case in the United States, just out of curiosity?
It's on the back pages, not the back pages. It's on the inside pages more,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Robin, on the front pages. There is a bit of a backlash against it in the sense of, this is getting a bit silly.
Right.
Although, at the same time, everyone agrees that sexual harassment as such is very, very far from silly, and rape certainly is,
right,
or groping or anything like that. That's ridiculous. Uh, or in the case of Roy Moore. He's alleged to have approached a 14-year-old.
Right.
And that's just not on.
Right. And and of course, we've had
and
this.
That brings it, every time that happens, it sort of comes back onto the front page.
Okay.
But there's a lot on the inside page, which,
The other aspect.
Three or four weeks ago would have been on the front.
Well, and of course, then we've had this situation. I know that this has been covered in the UK press and the European press. Roman Polanski, other charges associated with that. And of course, there he is benefiting from, if you will, a national coverage worldwide. But his experiences both in the States there and in Europe. Let's move on to other items with you. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, the analysis of the Trump visit, President Trump's visit to Asia, how is that being covered in the press there?
Well, you know, it's sort of pros and cons, goods and bads. Mm-hmm. It was not all good, and it was not all bad. That they take heart from the fact that he cemented relations with the Japanese and the Chinese, that he didn't talk about punitive trade wars or anything like that. He offered to meet with Kim Jong-un. He gave a very reasoned address to the South Korean parliament. On the con side, they point out that he cut short his visit to the Philippines, that he appears to be supporting Duterte's extrajudicial methods in tackling drugs, and that there's this contradiction between what he says about supporting the intelligence community in the States and at the same time saying that he believes Putin, when Putin says he had nothing to do with hacking into or in any way interfering with the American elections, when, of course, the intelligence community says the exact opposite.
And in fact, I saw as recently as today that both Germany and the United Kingdom have expressed concerns about interference, if you will, and influence in the elections in those countries as well.
The head of the electronic surveillance here said that there have been at least 590 attempts in the past 12 to 18 months to not just hack in and affect the elections, but also to hack into the electrical system, try and disrupt it, and things like that.
You know, it is somewhat of a conundrum because the European community has been at times trying to close the relationship with Vladimir Putin. And, it's just a matter of mixed messages. Real quickly, the issue of Duterte.
What do you mean close the relationship?
Well, I know that, for example, Chancellor Merkel was trying to create a closer relationship with Russia for natural gas and its energy resources. And, of course, there's a desire to some degree try to strengthen economic relations with Russia, I would think. I just find this interesting.
I think the EU wants to have close relations with Russia. I think it's very similar. I mean, one thing I think that Trump and Putin have in common is that they don't like the existence of the EU as a large trading bloc or political bloc, but they prefer to deal with small states. Europe broken up because he would be the dominant person on the European continent.
I'll agree with you with probably Vladimir Putin's approach, but I disagree with you on the issue of Donald Trump. I don't want to get into a debate here on that topic, but I don't think that is the case. I think what really the president has been saying for quite some time here is that he is going to be America first, and he will communicate and work with those countries that recognize that it's an American agenda that he wants to promote, not a world agenda. But I don't want to. I digress on that one, because I know we've got to go to a quick break here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. But Tom, wrapping it up before we go to the break, because I want to stay with Russia here in just a few moments. The relations now with Russia, are they improving in any way, shape, or form?
No, no, definitely not. I mean, all this business of the cyber hacking and everything else, and the fact that, you know, the Russians are not giving an inch on Ukraine, all that is means that the relations are continuing to go downhill.
Well, all right, I want to get to back that.
I mean, we still need Russia's natural gas, of course.
Right.
But, you know, so you have to balance that against it.
Okay, I want to get back to that in relationship to Brexit here in just a moment. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Just to remind you, do log on to LookAheadNews.com and become a subscriber. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints Around the World on the talk station FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week being the 20th of November. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. The cloud over Zimbabwe after last week's military coup should start to dispel this week, and the fate of 93-year-old President Mugabe and his wife Grace should be clearer. But completely muddled is the Middle East. Lebanon's Independence Day is on Monday, but Prime Minister Al-Hariri may be in France, Saudi Arabia, or Lebanon. He hasn't decided. After his surprising resignation, which may or may not have been forced on him by the Saudis. The Saudis, meanwhile, continue to line up forces against arch-foe Iran by hosting a Riyadh conference on Wednesday to unify Syrian opposition forces before a UN conference on Syria on the 28th of November. Silvio Berlusconi, the controversial and flamboyant former Italian Prime Minister, is taking his country to the European Court of Human Rights on Wednesday. He's appealing against an Italian court's ban on his holding public office imposed on him in 2013 after he was convicted of tax fraud and sentenced to 4 years in prison. The International Court of Justice on Monday is presented with the Stockholm Human Rights Award by the King and Queen of Sweden. The decision to present the award to the court is meant to underscore the importance of the rule of international law and agreements in the face of competing pressures from populist politicians. The inquest starts on Thursday into the Manchester Arena bombing, which killed 22 people, and on the same day there will be a drop-in session for West Londoners seeking facts about the Grenfell fire, which cost 71 lives. Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer presents his second budget in a year as he tries to balance demands for an end to austerity with the economic realities facing Brexit Britain. The status of the Brexit talks will be the main topic when EU foreign ministers meet in Brussels on Monday, to be briefed by European Commission negotiator Michel Barnier. The UN International Day of Violence Against Women is marked on Saturday. French President Emmanuel Macron will give a major speech on the issue. Thursday is Thanksgiving Day in America. And on Friday, it is Black Friday, when Americans spend billions on Christmas presents. Local elections will be held in Denmark on Tuesday. State elections will be held in Australia's Queensland on Saturday. In Nepal, one of Asia's poorest countries, there will be parliamentary elections on Sunday. And presidential and congressional elections are scheduled in Honduras also on Sunday. And that was next week's news today so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us this afternoon from London, England. And this portion has been pre-recorded, accommodating his sleep schedule. It's nearly midnight as this program airs live here on the talk station. Tom, I do want to talk to you. We were chatting a few moments ago about Russia and the Russian involvement in elections. You have a story here, a note here. Kremlin is ordering Russian business to supply good news?
Absolutely. Yeah, and this is for the elections. You know, the campaign is in full swing. And so Putin has put out the order. This is a Reuters story, a Reuters exclusive. Mm-hmm. They came across a document from the Kremlin to about 40 major businesses, saying, we want good news to publicize before the election.
Okay, now when is the election? And by the way, is this the election?
March.
Okay, and who stands for election in Russia? What offices are we looking at?
Well, I mean, Putin's going to stand.
Okay.
This is the presidential elections.
Okay. Is there, by the way, is there an opposition to Vladimir Putin of consequence?
No, not much. There's a chap called Alexei Navalny. They keep arresting him.
All right.
And they keep arresting him because there is, you know, basically they're trumped up charges each time. But there's a law which says if you're convicted of a felony, you cannot run for president or you uh-huh. cannot be president. And so they keep arresting him on trumped up charges.
You keep using the word Trump.
Debatable. They think he might be able to run or he might, you know, go as a write-in or something like that. But that's the only real opposition.
You know, it's interesting. You keep bringing up President Trump's name, trumped up charges. But anyhow, I just had to throw that little.
I don't mean to. That's how the term is used.
No, I'm being, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, a little humor
there's no
here.
There's no hidden agenda there.
Okay, good.
As everyone knows, I love Donald Trump.
That's grand. I'm glad to hear that. All right, let's talk about a few other items since we're there in your home country of London. Let's talk about Brexit. And of course, this goes back to the topic of, quite frankly, of Russia. The referendum, which was narrowly passed to leave the European Union. And I did read with interest this past week that apparently the European Union is now establishing some real deadlines for establishing, or if you will, the divorce of the United Kingdom from the European Union. What is the status of Brexit at this point?
Well, it's being debated again in the House of Commons. What it is, there's 470 amendments which have been tabled to the Great Repeal Bill, as it's called, and that's or the EU Withdrawal Bill. Now, one of the keys is that Mrs. May has said that she's going to put a deadline on when agreement has to be reached. And that deadline is it the 29th of March? 29th of March, 2019. And that everything has to be agreed, and has to be passed by Parliament, and there can be no more debate after that.
I'm sorry. Are you,
if it isn't.
Let me interrupt. Let me interrupt very quickly. You said March 29th of 2019 or 2018?
2019.
It's going to take 2 years to accommodate all the amendments and debate associated?
No. And to do all the negotiations with the EU.
2 years. What happens in this two-year term, this period? I will get back to the details. But
they've got a lot of negotiating to do. They haven't even gotten past the first hurdle. This is when they'll be hammering out the details of trade, future trade arrangements.
It's going to take 2 years to accomplish this?
It took 10 years to do a trade agreement with Canada.
Oh, wow. All right.
Trans-Pacific Partnership, I think, took 7 years.
What is the...
NAFTA took a number of years. These things take a long time.
Well, what's surprising about this, a lot can happen in 2 years, including a change in leadership there in the United Kingdom.
Absolutely.
And
it could do. But at any rate, this is important to stress. If no agreement is reached in the 2 years by the deadline, then there is no agreement. Basically, that's just a cutoff point, and they leave without any trade deal or anything.
And
that has been described as the cliff edge option. And there are, I believe, about 17 Conservative MPs who have already said they will not agree to a guillotine, as it's called.
Uh-huh. All right.
Because... You know, it's basically saying, you know, you've got to accept what we say by a certain date, and if you don't, you know, forget it.
Tom Arms go back to this very quickly. Just to remind folks, Tom Arms is our guest this afternoon here. We look viewpoints around the world. Tom, the question I have then is there a possibility that there could be a rescission of the original agreement to leave Brexit? Is it conceivable that during this length of time there could be another referendum which would nullify the previous referendum?
It would seem unlikely, but I don't think anything is impossible.
And if that were to happen, what would be involved in trying to reestablish the guidelines, or would they just be as they are currently in place? What I'm trying to understand is
legally speaking, according to the European Commission, once they have invoked what's called Article 50, which is the leaving process, which they've done, once they've done that, they cannot come back on the same terms at which they left. They have to renegotiate the terms of entry. And that the terms of entry would include, they would insist upon including things like membership of the common currency, the euro, which the British have always been against, and also membership of the Schengen area.
Of course, that has to do with the refugees and free movement of
Well, they have free movement to people anyway.
Okay.
But it basically, it's more of a refugee question. The Schengen agreement, you know, European citizens can come into the UK now with without any problem other than showing their passport. But under the Schengen agreement, they don't have to even show their passport.
Tom, what is the current state of the economy there in the United Kingdom with all of this, disruption, for want of a better description?
Okay. In the past 6 months, the growth rate, GDP, has gone from 3% to 1%.
How is this resonating with the voters and the populace at large?
It's not really having an impact on the economy much at the moment, or on the pound in your pocket. And I think, you know, we had someone staying with us last night who said, you know, the people in Middle England, which is, as we know, the vast majority of people, just as the people in Middle America, are just, let's get on with it. You know, we made our decision, let's get on with it. But there's still a large number of people who live in places like London and Manchester and Edinburgh and so forth, the big cities.
The industrial areas.
Think, no, we're going to fight this tooth and nail and right to the bitter end.
All right.
I'd say probably it's still almost 50-50, just as it was at the referendum.
All right. We're going to get back to this in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. Just to remind you, you can log on to his website and or his blog. Go to LookAheadNews.com and become a subscriber. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We were chatting with him about just a few moments ago on the issue of Brexit, the British exit from the European Union. And I want to talk to you about some issues associated with defense, and they kind of relate to what's happening in the world politique. We'll get to Saudi Arabia in a few moments. But I know that Europe is looking at establishing its own defense plan. And I know that Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, has expressed some support for this. This, of course, I would say parallels the efforts of NATO, but in some instances separate and apart from NATO. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Now, it's very complicated. The Europeans have, or the French in particular, have always wanted a separate European defense organization tied to the EU and separate from NATO. They wanted that because they were dominated. The British have always been frightened that the U.S. would become decoupled if you set that up. And so they have been opposed to it. Now that Britain is leaving the EU, there's an opportunity for France to push forward with its plans, which it is doing very, very successfully. The British have an agreement with France to come to each other's aid with their nuclear weapons. This is separate from the NATO structure. And Mrs. May gave a speech the other day in which she said that Britain would want to continue to continued to provide the support of its military forces, which are the largest in the EU or in Europe outside of Russia, would like to continue to provide its military support to the European Union. Now, implicit in that is that, you know, if we don't get the trade deal we want, maybe we won't be providing so much support. And that, of course, only encourages the people on the continent to spend more money on defense, which, of course, is what Donald Trump would like. But the problem is, if they're spending more money on defense, they will also be calling the shots on how that money is used. So if there's any disagreement between the U.S. And Britain on one side and the EU on the other on, say, you know, fighting Iran, for instance, or committing troops in Syria or Iraq or Africa, then, you know, the U.S. cannot be as assured of European support if Europe has its own defense command structure and is paying more for its defense.
Looking at this, and of course, in relationship to the purpose of NATO and ostensibly the new military defense program for Europe, has been, and we're going to get back to, Russia. And is that still perceived as the primary, if you will, opponent to this and the need for this European defense?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Russia it remains the greatest threat.
It is interesting. We're going to get into another topic that's really kind of associated with this, and we're going to talk about this in a few moments with Poland. But I'm going back to the efforts afoot to close relations in some instances with Russia, particularly I mentioned a few moments ago, Chancellor Merkel from Germany Angela Merkel has been working to create a closer relationship with Russia because of course energy reserves and things of that nature. Is there any effort to come to some bridge or agreement with Russia, and or is Russia still perceived as really kind of a tyranny?
It's very difficult to come to a bridge. They've drawn a red line through Ukraine.
Okay.
And it's very difficult to come to that bridge until there's movement on that red line.
All right.
Until either Europe accepts that Eastern Ukraine and Crimea are now part of Russia and will be, and it's a fait accompli, or Russia withdraws.
All right.
Ukraine is the biggest stumbling block, because as long as they're there, there's this concern that they're going to move into other areas.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's a very valid observation. All right. I want to step over to an issue that harkens back to World War II. You make note of this in your notes to me. Poland is demanding World War II reparations from Germany. Ah, but wait a second. The Germans and the Poles are now, arguably, in
allies.
Allies. Yeah. This is going to be tough.
It's really interesting. You often refer to, Tom, why are you talking about ancient history?
It's
and
not.
I'm saying, well, ancient history counts.
Yes.
And it certainly does in this case.
Oh, it does.
You know, I mean, World War II is still a very live issue here.
Mm-hmm.
And the Poles, they haven't officially put an exact sum on it, but they're talking about $1 trillion
and
in reparations. Now, part of the reason is the Law and Justice Party, which is in power, is a right-wing populist party, you know, nationalist, you know, Poland First-type party. And as such, it's Eurosceptic. It's always fighting for its right against Europe. And, of course, Germany is the dominant power in EU.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an element of it. But also, during the war, 6 million Poles died.
Right.
6 million, 12.7% of the population, 3 million of them were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Warsaw was razed in 1944 in what was called the Warsaw Uprising, completely leveled, destroyed. Now, after the war, the East German government, which was the one recognized by the Soviet Union, which was in control of Poland, the Polish government waived any right to reparations in return for a big chunk of East German land.
Okay.
And so the German government now says, you got your reparations. What they got actually was about 25% of Germany before 1939. Mm. And the Poles say, no, it wasn't enough. You know, it wasn't enough. The Catholic Church, which, as you know, is very politically strong in Poland, is saying, oh, shut up, you stupid Polish government. You know, you're rocking the boat here. We've got good relations with Germany at the moment, and that's more important than, you know, trying to score points for your Eurosceptic audience.
You know, Tom, the whole purpose of, one of the purposes of the European Union, one of the purposes of NATO was to avoid these kind of disputes going forward. And of course, it was reparations that, quite frankly, devolved into World War II. One of the big issues and the absolute impact it had in destructive nature on Germany following World War I. So it's really intriguing that this has raised its head at this point in light of the concern of Russia.
I might add that there's another country which has been sort of quietly in the background calling for reparations. They didn't get much in the way of reparations. I don't think they got anything. Mm-hmm. And that is Greece.
Right. Well,
and guess how much they're asking for?
How much?
$300 billion. Guess how much their debt is?
$300 billion.
No.
What?
$299.7.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, what's a few hundred million between friends? All right, I want to move on to that. This is an important story. And one, very quickly, is there any kind of time frame in which this will be settled?
No, okay. No, it's just being bounced around. I don't know how much of it is, you know, for the domestic audience to make them what I would say is strengthen the Eurosceptic credentials.
All right,
you know, standing up to Germany makes you look strong.
Right,
and so that might be part of it.
Okay, and of course we'll have to ask: the French play any role in this? Will President Macron have any influence in this? Because, of course, he's been, if you will, positioning himself, to a degree, of becoming the next leader within the European Union. I want to move on to another item, and one that's pretty important, one we're kind of scratching our head at and looking at, and that's Saudi Arabia and the changes that are happening there and the war, quite frankly, some concerns related to war talk between Iran and Saudi Arabia. What is taking place in Saudi Arabia?
It's very worrying. Basically, the crown prince there is trying to modernize Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to wean them off the dependence on oil revenues, introduce new industries, banking facilities, things like that. He's trying to modernize them culturally by giving women the right to drive, mm-hmm. Go to the cinema or movies, and all these sort of things. Well, this doesn't go over very well with a lot of very conservative people in Saudi Arabia. He's completely alienated the religious police force, a lot of members of his own family. And it looks as if they were on the verge of a counter coup when he staged a counter coup and locked them up. They've been fighting this war in Yemen since 2015. It's not going well. It has all the hallmarks of being Saudi Arabia's Cold War, Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what they say is that you have in the Middle East at the moment, you have a sort of regional Cold War,
right,
with Iran on one side and Saudi Arabia on the other. And just as during the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, there were various points at which it almost went hot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at that point now where it is getting quite warm.
Is there any effort on the part of the European community to intercede, or is this something that's, quite frankly,
you just mentioned Emmanuel Macron. He's just been in France,
uh-huh.
And he's been in the UAE, and, you know, he basically was offering to intercede. I don't know how successful he was.
All right.
But certainly people are offering themselves as brokers. The problem is nobody has particularly good relations with Iran.
Right. And of course, they've...
The only ones who have good relations with Iran are Turkey and Syria.
And Russia.
And Russia.
Right. All right. Again, Russia continues to play a disruptive role throughout the world. We'll get back to more details here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Recent events in Zimbabwe have underscored the fragility, failings, and dangers of unrepresentative government and the absence of the rule of law exercised by an independent judiciary. Note the use of the term representative government and rule of law. Democracy is a much overworked term which is mainly used to describe the American and British political models. The existence of hundreds of different nationalities dictates that each nationality finds a form of representative government that suits its particular history and culture. But it must be representative, because as Zimbabwe has demonstrated, the problem with dictatorships or unrepresentative governments is that they attract corruption and repression. Such a government will succeed for a time as the governed compare the rulers to the incompetence of their predecessors. But gradually, the misdeeds of the new dictator mount and are added to an increasingly explosive recipe. The dictator attempts to stay in power by repressing dissent and screwing down the lid on simmering discontent. But the issues feeding the discontent refuse to go away. Because of the repression, they simmer all the more violently in a pressure cooker political environment without the escape valve of a representative system through which legitimate discontent can be expressed. Eventually, the pressure becomes overwhelming. The political pot bursts with a violent overthrow of the dictator, which damages the dictator, the governed, their country, and usually leads to a sad cycle of dictator, repression, overthrow, dictator, ... So where does the rule of law enter the recipe? Representative government, especially one based on the rule of a simple majority, is not enough. That leads to a dictatorship of the mathematical majority over the legitimate rights and concerns of the minority. The world stage is littered with such examples. The Shias in Iran, the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia, Muslims in India, Hindus in Pakistan, the Rohingyas in Myanmar, Christians and Muslims in Lebanon, African Americans and Hispanics in America, Asians and Afro-Caribbeans in Britain. Some countries attempt to surmount the minority's problem by reserving a set number of seats for minority groups in the legislature. Not enough. Some countries attempt to surmount the minority's problem by reserving a set number of seats for minority groups in the legislature. Not enough. The right of all the citizens must be protected by the rule of law exercised by a judiciary independent of the political winds of change and based on the acceptance of common law and human rights. Without the rule of law to protect minority rights, the government can shout night and day to the rooftops about democracy and majorities. But they're creating a pressure cooker which can be just as dangerous as any constructed by despots such as Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe. I like to think Mugabe started off with reasonable, if not good, intentions. I don't believe he set out to create a corrupt system which allowed his second wife to be nicknamed Gucci Grace. We met during the Lancaster House constitutional talks in London. Of all the delegates, Mugabe was clearly the most intelligent, charming, and charismatic. He also had a visceral hatred of the white race and of Britain. However, he tried to suppress that in the pursuit of the goal of Zimbabwean independence. For a while, he succeeded. It didn't last. Partly because the guerrillas who fought for independence from Mugabe and ZANU-PF believed that they were fighting for economic as well as political control. 10 years after independence, 70% of Zimbabwean land remained in the hands of white farmers, even though they had been reduced to just 1% of the population. Mugabe tried to assuage the anger of the war veterans with hefty pensions. which the state couldn't afford. Not enough. The war veterans wanted more. They wanted the land, so they took it. White farmers were forcibly dispossessed and sometimes murdered by marauding war veterans. The veterans were taken to court and initially lost. Then Mugabe stepped in and declared, "We will respect judges where judgments are true judgments." And who determines what is a true judgment? Robert Mugabe, of course. From that moment, the power and protection of the courts plummeted. The economy collapsed, hyperinflation took over, corruption became rife, and the pressure cooker simmered, simmered, and finally exploded.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This last segment, we always are looking forward to a little bit of a twist in the story. But before we get to the topic of South Africa and the South African's middle finger financial graph, I find that interesting. I'm smiling as I'm reading it. Real quickly, Tom, U.S. Pushes coal at the climate change conference and demonstrators protest. What's taking place there? Of course, there's continuing disputes over the fact that the U.S. has decided to leave the peace accord. What's happening there?
Well, you know, they've left. It's not a peace, the climate change accord.
Mm-hmm, climate change accord, yeah.
They've left, but it doesn't take effect for 2 years. It's a sort of withdrawal process.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went along. Everyone else sent someone at cabinet rank to the latest climate change conference in Bonn. The U.S. sent someone of undersecretary of state rank,
mm-hmm.
which annoyed a lot of people, including who was that mayor of New York? Michael Bloomberg. He was furious about that.
Right.
And the delegation went with the purpose not of really talking about climate change, but of talking about how to promote coal. Which is, of course, what climate change conference is trying to do is to reduce the use of coal. And the U.S. delegation was there having meetings on how to increase the use of coal. This made a lot of people very angry. There were demonstrators. People were shouting. So it's just, I can't remember. What did Die Welt say? Do we laugh or cry? Was their headline.
Okay, and of course the question is that what's the future of the peace, the climate accord? How is that pursuing at this point?
Well, it's pursuing without the United States. They were rather hoping the United States wouldn't even bother to turn up. What is happening is they were a bit annoyed. The United States turned up and tried to disrupt it. In fact, is how they see it.
Okay,
they're going to spend the 2 years pursuing a separate agenda. You probably know that the U.S. now is the only country, now that Syria has signed up, and Nicaragua. Is the only country which has not signed up to the climate change agreement.
Well, was assigned up. They've left it, that climate change agreement. Let's wrap things up with South Africa's middle finger financial graph.
Yeah, this is good. Well, as you probably know, it's a very corrupt country at the moment. And one of the families who are believed to be leading the corruption are the Guptas. They have close relations with the president, Jacob Zuma. And they own a number of countries. One of them is called Obowe. Obowe is a tiny country. So if you buy shares in it, you can buy 5 shares, and it affects the outline of the graph. And so someone had the brilliant idea, a man by the name of James Gubb, of buying shares in such a way and at certain times during the day that a graph appeared on the screen of the knuckles of the hand except for the middle finger, which was sticking up in the air.
And how has that been received? Just out of curiosity.
He got fined. Got fined $1,000, but he said it was worth it. It got quite a few chuckles.
I can imagine. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. As always, to remind you, you can log on to his weekly blog lookaheadnews.com. Subscribe. And, of course, listening to Look Ahead Radio here on the station and stations around the world, literally. Tom, as always, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world here on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.